Welcome to the Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore. It is Tuesday, March the 2nd, 2021. On this edition of the Politocrat, a look at the ultra-millionaire tax. It was a tax introduced at a press conference yesterday by Senator Elizabeth Warren and the House Representatives Premier Jayapal and Brendan Boyle. Parts of that press conference will be played on this episode and a conversation about what we need to do to make sure that this wealth tax is actually passed on the floor of the House and the Senate. One of the things that I found to be really good in terms of a press conference that took place yesterday was the press conference held in the United States Senate press room that was led by Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. It was really good to see this press conference, and if you didn't get a chance to see or hear it, I'm going to be playing clips from it shortly. But during this press conference, what the press conference was about, I should say, is Senator Warren, along with the chair of the Progressive Caucus, Premier Jayapal of the House of Representatives, Representative Jayapal and Representative Brendan Boyle, were also at this press conference talking about the wealth tax, which is something that the three of them have authored in their respective chambers. Certainly, they are pushing this idea, this tax, and this is something that I hope passes, and you should hope it does too. Because what it does is do two things. One, ensures that the super rich in this country pay their fair share. And quite frankly, this is just the tip of the iceberg, this wealth tax. It is a start. It doesn't move mountains, but it is a heck of a start, I think. Still, of course, like with anything else, as with anything else, more can and should be done, and I think will be done. But what happens with this wealth tax as it is now, if it does pass, is that if you are making more than $50 million, if you have made more than $50 million a year, or if you're making more than $50 million a year, up until $1 trillion, you are taxed 2% of every dollar. So for every dollar that you've made, over $50 billion with a B, dollars. Each of those dollars is taxed. Each of those dollars, over $50 billion, is taxed 2%. Right up until $1 trillion worth of money. And I think it's a really good idea. It brings in revenue. And it's a relatively painless tax for the wealthiest. It would be 2% of every dollar earned over $50 billion right up until $1 trillion, with a capital T, trillion dollars. And for every dollar above $1 trillion, each of those dollars will be taxed at 3%. Every dollar taxed at 3%. Again, I think it's a great idea. It's what's called the ultra-millionaire tax, aka the wealth tax. We used to kind of have one of these taxes. I've talked about this before. when the tax rate in this country was at 94% during the 1950s, 1940s. I mean, this is what Roosevelt did. This is what presidents around that era did. Tax rates were much, much higher on the super rich. There's no reason why that should not be the case now. It's a great way to raise revenue. It's a great way to raise enough revenue to fund schools and have much better education, more money spent on it. It's enough money that would be raised in revenue. I mean, it would be billions and billions of dollars raised. Enough to focus on eradicating homelessness, focus on criminal justice reform and the money you can spend to properly address that. There'd be enough money from this wealth tax to deal with strengthening infrastructure. I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg. There'd be so much money that you could really do good things with. That could really help improve the quality of people's lives, help improve this infrastructure, as I just mentioned, and all kinds of other things. Home building, I mean, everything. There's so much. Schools, the conditions of schools. I think this tax is a really good idea, and I really do believe that this can pass, but we have to be the ones to start making the phone calls. We have to be the ones to start doing that. And I think we've got to do that now and pronto. Because you have seen how long it has taken just to even get the Senate to even vote on this next COVID-19 stimulus package. They're finally going to take it up this week. It might be as early as today. It may well be later on in the week. But can you believe, I guess I can, and I guess you can too, that it is taken up until March 2021 for the United States Senate to just start contemplating and debating and perhaps voting this particular week in March? On something that the American public have been really crying out for. And let's face it, that stimulus package that just came by in late December, early January, really was a blip. It was better than nothing. But when all is said and done, it was a blip. The $1.9 trillion COVID relief package, which was passed late last week, and late at night on the East Coast by the United States House of Representatives. This is the same bill. It also contains a $15 minimum wage. By the way, progressives involved heavily in getting it to stay in that bill. Premier Jayapal was one of the progressives who led the charge to ensure that the $15 minimum wage provision was not stripped out of the House bill. That particular bill with the COVID relief at $1.9 trillion, that bill passed, as I said, late last week, late at night on the East Coast. Now, this week, that same bill, except SOMS, minimum wage provision, will be deliberated on and voted on in the Senate. Again, it may be as soon as today, or it may be later on this week. This ultra, and I'll get to some more about this COVID relief bill, but this is separate and apart from the ultra millionaire tax. And I think this bill is a long time coming because, again, it's what we did back in the 1940s and 50s. You had the roaring 20s and the golden age and all of that when you had the moneyed classes in this country cleaning up. Absolutely cleaning up. Then they lost their shirts with the Republican Great Depression of the late 1920s, early 1930s. And the taxation to drive up revenue for the good of everybody was something that FDR dealt with in the 1930s, and subsequent presidents kept it fairly honest for the most part. And you had a tax rate of the super wealthy at 90%+, around 94%. That lasted until maybe the mid to late 1960s. It started to come down a little bit. And by the time we got into the 1970s, it was down to around 60-something% or thereabout. And then when Reagan came in, it plummeted more, around 38% or so. And now, the rich don't pay any tax. The super rich, they don't pay a darn thing in tax. I think I've told you before, dear listener, on this podcast, that Jeff Bezos and Amazon, I mean, they didn't pay any income tax. They got some almighty $159 million federal income tax refund in 2019. It's obscene. Just last March, almost a year ago now, Jeff Bezos, or Bezos, however you pronounce his name, was trading off people dying in this COVID-19 pandemic because he was selling off stocks left, right, and center. He bagged, as a result of his trades, something like $5 billion. Close to $5 billion. Guy made a windfall. And he didn't get much of any tax on that whatsoever. So this ultra-millionaire tax, which clearly applies to people like Jeff Bezos, is something that I think is enormously important. It's very helpful. The wealth inequality in this country is absolutely off the charts. And that's the key thing. Wealth inequality. Yes, there's income inequality, but there's also wealth inequality. And that's the thing. That is the thing that has drowned and is drowning the American worker, the working class, the working poor, the middle class. They're being strangled. Strangled by all of this upper 1%, the echelon of echelons, the top 1% and the top 1/10 of 1% of wage, of wealth, not even wage, of people with extreme wealth. They're the ones that control more than 75% of the wealth of the entire country. You're going to be hearing some clips from this press conference, dear listener, after this break. And it's going to just boggle your mind. You really do need to listen to this because I think it's very, very important. Senator Elizabeth Warren, you're going to be hearing a little bit from her. You're going to be hearing a little bit from, in fact, you're going to hear all of the opening remarks by Representative Premier Jayapal of Washington State. She is the chair of the Progressive Caucus. Wait until you hear what she has to say. And you'll also be hearing from Representative Brendan Boyle of Pennsylvania, Philadelphia specifically, actually, I think. You have to listen to what these individuals said yesterday at their press conference to put all of this in perspective. And their explanations of all this, I think, will blow you away. Fasten your seatbelts and stay tuned. Welcome back. So the first person you're going to be hearing from is Senator Elizabeth Warren. Of course, as you know very well, she ran for president in 2020. And you have to listen to this. It will blow your mind. It really will. I think it will. Then you're going to be hearing from Representative Premier Jayapal. She is the chair of the Progressive Caucus in the House of Representatives. And then finally, you'll be hearing a little bit from Representative Brendan Boyle of Philadelphia. He is also, I believe, on the Progressive Caucus as well. You just have to hear this. And they will explain this much clearer than I have. You just have to hear how they explain this. So, without any further ado, here is first Senator Elizabeth Warren.
And we're here to talk about the wealth tax. It is time for a wealth tax in America. I want to remind everybody what the wealth tax is. It is a tax on the fortunes above $50 million. In other words, your first $50 million is free and clear, but your 50 millionth and first dollar, you got to pay 2 cents. And 2 cents on every dollar after that until you hit a billion. When you hit a billion, you got to pay a few cents more. This is a wealth tax that has been needed for a long time. We need it to produce more revenue, to create more opportunity in America. But it is a wealth tax that we particularly need because of the changes in this country under the pandemic. We have watched the wealth of the billionaire class in America increase by more than $1 trillion over the last year. A 2 cent wealth tax would just help level the playing field a little bit and create the kind of revenue that would let us build back better, as Joe Biden says, would let us make the investments in our children, investments in infrastructure, investments in a clean economy, investments in America's future.
So this is a moment where I think structural inequality and inequity has really been laid bare during this pandemic and this economic crisis. It is a moment where 1 in 7 families don't have enough to eat. More than 8 million people have been pushed into poverty. Nearly 1 million new people every week are filing unemployment claims. And that's on top of the more than 75 million who have lost their jobs. This historic loss of jobs has also led to a historic loss of health care. And all of this has happened as we've surpassed 512,000 deaths due to COVID. But as working families have struggled and as their savings have dried up and food banks have been overwhelmed, as the senator said, the rich have only gotten richer. U.S. billionaires have become $1.3 trillion richer since COVID began. That is a 44% jump in their wealth just since March. And it's not just a few billionaires getting wealthier. There have been 46 new billionaires created during this pandemic. Now, today, the richest 1% own 35% of the nation's wealth, and the richest 0.1%, that's 0.1%, own more than 18% of America's wealth. Then just compare that to the entire bottom half of Americans owning just 1.5% of wealth. So in the simplest terms, there are the richest 130,000 families in America who hold nearly as much wealth as the bottom 117 million families combined. Now, I want to just spend a minute on Black and Brown and Indigenous families and the racial wealth gap, because this is really critical. It's particularly staggering when you look at racial inequality as related to wealth. White families have an average wealth that is more than 14 times as much as Black families and 8 times as much as Latinx families. And in fact, the 400 richest Americans own more wealth than all Black households and a quarter of Latino households combined. That's happening as 1 in 3 Black and Latinx families have zero or negative wealth. And for Asian Americans, a group that is way too little studied, and there's way too little information here, income and wealth distribution inequality has gone from being one of the most equal to actually one of the most unequal among major racial groups in the United States. Now, this is no accident. Our history is that much of the wealth of white families was accumulated at the expense of Black, Brown, and Indigenous families, from legalized slavery to redlining. And the extreme inequality and concentration of wealth and racial inequity is baked into our tax system because we only tax income and wages and not wealth that has been amassed through business or equity or real estate, fine arts. And then we pass it down through inheritances, remaining free of taxes for the most part the whole time. So it's a wealth inequality level that no other leading country in the world has seen. Our legislation, as the senator said, finally helps just level the playing field and ensures that the wealthiest begin to pay their fair share. And it does so all the while investing trillions of dollars into our communities. You already heard what it does, a 2% annual tax on those who have a net worth between $50 million and $1 billion. And yeah, you pitch in a little bit more if you've got more than a billion. But if you're like 99.95% of Americans who have a net worth of less than $50 million, you pay nothing new, not a penny. This tax only impacts 100,000 households, the top 0.05%. But still, it would bring in $3 trillion over 10 years. Just imagine what we could do with $3 trillion. That's COVID relief, it's healthcare, it's infrastructure, education, a transition to renewable energy and affordable housing, all the while reducing that racial wealth gap. And that's why the majority of Americans support an ultra-millionaire tax. Poll after poll has found that voters are with us on this, that it is time for the rich to pay their fair share. It's not just Democrats, it's moderates, it's independents, and even a plurality of Republicans. So I'm looking forward to working on this in the House with my colleagues and to bringing finally a fairness and an equity to our system.
The hyper-concentration of wealth among the top one-tenth of 1% is a mortal threat to the American dream. Consider that in the last generation, while the share of the wealth owned by the very top has tripled, the size of the great American middle class has shrunk, and it has shrunk, according to Pew, considerably. This is the first generation, mine is the first generation in American history that can say they have seen the decline of the size of the American middle class. As Elizabeth was recently reminding me when we were speaking, an American born around the same time as my father had a 90% chance to make more than his parents did, while an American born around the same time I was has about a 50-50 chance. That's not consistent with the American dream. The unprecedented spike in wealth among a tiny sliver of the population is stifling both opportunity and social mobility. So the wealth tax is both a fair and necessary step to begin to address this existential challenge. Now let me address two criticisms I've heard from the outset. First, there are those who will say this is socialism or communism or God knows what else they'll come up with. Well, they said the same exact thing about Franklin Roosevelt's proposals in the 1930s. They were wrong then, and they were wrong now.
Wow. Wasn't that extraordinary? I mean, I'm not trying to oversell this at all. That was extraordinary. The wealth gap between black people and white people in the United States of America, well, that did not shock me. As sad as that gap is, of course, due to the enslavement of black people in this country by white people in this country, and due to the institutionalized racism, anti-black racism in this country that persists to this very day, due to the Jim Crow racist discrimination laws, due to the punishing of those who are black who actually had wealth, due to the terrorist attacks on black towns all over this country, where the black people in those towns who had a lot of wealth after Reconstruction and perhaps even before it, had their towns burned to the ground by white mobs of terrorist thugs and murderers. That's where your wealth gap comes from. That's where your Grand Canyon-sized wealth gap arises. if you listen to that and you listened carefully to the words, particularly by Representative Jayapal, and if you listen to what Senator Warren said and what Representative Boyle said, you get a rounded picture and you get a fully, fully live picture of just how much the top 0.1% skates by in this country. And what I thought of, dear listener, when I first heard those words at yesterday's press conference, what I thought of was the mother of three who is up at 3 a.m. getting ready to get on a bus. Of course, it's much harder to do that now given this pandemic. But I honestly was thinking about that mother of three or two or four who is getting up at 2 or 3 a.m. and getting ready to work the first of three different jobs during that day. And that mother of three is up at 2 or 3 a.m. getting ready to do the first of three jobs in one day. And she's doing that to make ends meet. She's not doing that to get super duper rich off these jobs that aren't even $15 an hour jobs, because we don't have a $15 an hour federal minimum wage in this country. It's still at something like $7 and change, if you can believe your ears. I am not joking. The federal minimum wage right now is roughly $7.40, somewhere around there. Yes, in some states it varies. Washington State and in California, it's, what, about $15 an hour right now. But for those of you not living in California or Washington State, you've got that mother, and she's working three jobs just to pay rent, just to keep the roof over her head, to keep the roof over her kids' heads, just to put food on a table. While the wealthiest of the wealthy pay nothing in taxes, nothing in taxes at all. Jeff Bezos makes off like a bandit, while people you know died from coronavirus. Last year, around this very time, he was selling stock. And he was making a mint. Billions of dollars. While that mother of three was toiling away during a pandemic, an essential worker, working three different jobs just to make ends meet. Now, George W. Bush, the war criminal, he would call that uniquely American, which is in fact what he told someone who said that she works three different jobs. I would call that a human rights violation. Anybody in the United States of America who has to work three jobs while the richest of the rich skate by on their trillions, that is an evil existence of a country. And that just calls out the country. To have a wealth gap this large as the Grand Canyon, the chasm From the north end of the canyon to the south end, it's literally miles across, miles wide. It's truly one of the most profound shames of the United States of America. To have a country where this exists, the richest country on earth, that can pass a $750 billion defense bill, lickety-split, bipartisan, no Senate parliamentarian there telling you that this cannot be done. But minimum wage, oh dear. Oh my God, we can't. We just can't do that. We just can't have that in our bill. It is such an immoral thing that mother of three has to work three jobs in the richest country on the planet just to make ends meet, just to feed her children, just to keep a roof over their heads. While the trillionaire, the Jeff Bezos of the world, of the country, he and others making billions and trillions of dollars a year are not getting taxed, not paying tax. These multi-trillion dollar corporations, Amazon, not paying a penny in federal income tax, not paying a penny in taxes. That is one of the true evils that we have going in the United States, among other evils. And that's who I thought of, that mother of three, that father, that person, whether they've got children or not, who are going out, risking their lives during a pandemic as essential workers and in conditions that are completely harmful to them because these multi-billion dollar corporations they work for aren't protecting them properly. They've got human rights violations, Amazon, I see you. And yet Amazon, which treats its workers like garbage, aren't and is not paying any tax at all. And the people who are toiling away at three different jobs are paying all this tax. You damn right I support this wealth tax. You damn right I support this ultra-millionaire tax. It's about damn time. It truly is remarkable, dear listener, that we are living in a country where maybe you may not be living in the United States, but that you know that the United States of America has such levels of wealth inequality, not just income inequality, but wealth inequality. And I believe that Representative Jayapal spelled that out in the comments that you heard. I mean, this is something that really hits home. And while people's eyes can get glazed over and their ears can kind of close when they hear these astronomical numbers and these disparities between people who are black and brown and then people who are white and just how much of a 500-year head start white people have in this country. And a head start powered by ill-gotten gains. I mean, a head start knowing that the people that you have the head start over built the country, built the railroads, built the White House, the U.S. Capitol building that had a terrorist attack launched against it 2 months ago. And when we talk about reparations, when I still talk about reparations and how we need to have reparations for black people in the United States, I hear people bristling at it. Some of them in the Democratic Party, some of them so-called liberals, whoever that word applies to, because I don't think that word makes a lot of sense anymore. Liberal. What is it? What is a liberal exactly? You can be a liberal racist. You can be a liberal misogynist. I mean, what the heck does that term mean anymore, liberal? And these so-called liberals, some of them, whoever they are, have a problem with reparations for us when you've got all of this wealth inequality in this country and you're worried about something that we should be rightly paid for? Our ancestors built this country. We were dragged over here forcefully against our will. Many of us died in the Middle Passage, our ancestors, and you're bristling at reparations? And you're looking at the wealth inequality in this country and the wealth gap between black people and white people, and you've got a problem with reparations for black people? How dare you? How dare you even think that that somehow is not palatable? You can't have reparations. Really? That's part of the evil too. Because until you confront what this country has done to the Native American and what this country has done to black people, you're not going to get anywhere. You're not going to get anywhere. Until you confront that and what's been done to brown people in this country, you're not going to free yourself. And the way you do that is to redress these wrongs, these grotesque atrocities and wrongs. You have to. And if you're not willing to do that, we are going to have some more combustible times, like the 245 or so years that have preceded this, almost 245 years. We still have not learned. And this wealth tax is one way of redressing having the billionaire class paying their fair share. And again, it's still a drop in the bucket. It's still a safe drop in the bucket, as you heard Senator Warren talk about. They're still going to be comfortable. Their wealth isn't being jeopardized. This is just a really quick, easy, effective way to raise revenue. And she corrected me, not billions, trillions of dollars worth of revenue on wealth that they have. It's not wages, it's wealth that they have, their fortunes. It's just sitting there. And all Senator Warren, Representative Jayapal, and Representative Boyle are doing with this introduction of this wealth tax, this ultra-millionaire tax, is to skim a little bit off the top of their fortunes. That's all. That's all they're doing. They're barely scratching the surface. This bill must pass in both chambers of Congress. And you have to get on the horn and make sure that it does as well. Call your congresspersons and call your senators. Please call your congressperson, call your two senators, 202-225-3121 or 202-224-3121. You have to do this. If you care, if you're someone who works three jobs, if you had three jobs, if you have no jobs, wherever you are financially, economically, please call one of those numbers. Do it today. Do not wait. When I come back, there is one other number, or I should say one other matter, that you will need those two phone numbers for. And I'm going to talk about it right after this. Welcome back. This is something that is really important to consider, and I think I alluded to it. I know I did a little earlier on in this episode on this Tuesday, dear listener, is the bill that passed last week in the House, the COVID-19 $1.9 trillion relief package, which includes stimulus checks that I think are going to be $1,400 and an extension of unemployment benefits to I don't know how long, and all kinds of other important parts of relief, bits of relief for the American public, which is drowning. The American public is drowning right now. in fear, economic uncertainty, financial strife, a lot of struggles, a lot of ups and downs, a lot of stress, a lot of discord and disharmony. This is really bad right now for a lot of people who aren't used to this. In other countries, they're probably chuckling at us. But maybe not. This economic downturn is not just limited to the United States of America. But the way we treat our own during these kinds of downturns is unique to us. Because we are the only industrialized nation on the face of God's green earth, this earth right here, that treats its own like this, that has to have these extended deliberations about whether or not a bill to help you and me and everyone we know as Americans actually pass, to actually have these deliberations. I know you have to talk about these things. You don't just go out there and slap a bill there and put it in place. I wish it would be that easy. Some countries just do this out of a matter of habit. There isn't all that much deliberation. But because you've got all this money in politics and all these lobbyists and all this and the donor class and all that other stuff, and these Republicans who are listening to their donors, and Democrats are too, you've got all of this garbage. Meanwhile, you are left holding the bag. The average person in the United States is left holding the bag while the two sides of very wealthy politicians, whether it's the Republicans or the Democrats, are standing there arguing with each other. Their kids are very well insulated from any kind of financial strife. They've all got health care. They've got the best health care money can buy. They're well protected. I'm all for that. I'm not griping at that at all. But I am only saying it to draw the contrast between them and you. There are millions of people in this country who do not have health insurance. And by the way, if you do not have any kind of health insurance at all, please go to healthcare.gov right now. I'm going to put a link to it in this episode. And apply for affordable health care now. Please do this. You have until, I think, mid-May or early May. Do not wait until then. Do it right after this episode. Or do it while you're listening to me. Because you have to. If you do not have any health care at all, I would strongly advise you to do this. Healthcare.gov. Healthcare.gov. For those of you who do not have health insurance at all. And please spread the word about that. People need to be aware of it. Because people who have television sets and people who don't have television sets and don't have internet access, they will not know about this. So you need to tell them. If they've got telephones, give them a call. Let them know. And then maybe they can borrow your computer. Maybe there's a way they can get internet access somewhere. I know a lot of public libraries obviously still are closed given this pandemic, but make them aware of this. Believe me, it will make a difference. Maybe they'll be able to sign up. But all of this is to say that this bill that passed last week in the House that has the $15 minimum wage provision in it is, as you know, something that was rejected by the Senate parliamentarian, and she, in her infinite wisdom, declared that, ooh, no, we can't have this $15 provision for minimum wage in the bill on the Senate side. And the problem is that that can be, well, the issue is, and I'm glad that it's an issue, is that that ruling can be overruled. It can be overruled by the Senate majority leader, I believe. It can be overruled by the vice president, who is the president of the Senate. And in that case, that would be Vice President Kamala Harris. Now, from what I understand, there are a number of progressive groups. In fact, I know this for a fact because I was listening in on the meeting yesterday evening. Our Revolution is one of the progressive groups that has sent a letter to the White House, to President Biden, and to Vice President Kamala Harris, requesting, if not downright demanding, that they overrule the Senate parliamentarian and say, forget that. We're going to have the $15 minimum wage provision in the bill on the Senate side. It's been done before. The Senate parliamentarian is an advisory. Her word, or his word, or their word, in this case her word, is not the last word. It is not the last word. Which means that you and I have got to get on the telephone again and call up 202-224-3121 or 202-225-3121 and tell your senators, especially Chuck Schumer, the majority leader, that this Senate parliamentarian ruling has got to be overturned. Overrule him. Overrule that person. Please overrule her. And you need to call the White House as well. You need to call the White House. Because that's where the pressure has to really be. Vice President Harris, who campaigned on this when she was running herself for president last year, we've got to have an increased minimum wage. I support the $15 an hour minimum. She supported that in her campaign. And you have to remind her that she supported that in her presidential campaign. Because it would not be very becoming of you to fail to do so. The honeymoon is over for President Biden and for Vice President Harris. I'm telling you, the honeymoon is over. And what you need to do, and I'm going to give you two numbers for the White House, because this is very important. If you want that $15 an hour provision in that Senate bill to be overruled so that that provision stays in the Senate bill, you need to call one of these two phone numbers. I'll give you them right now. 202-456-1414. That is the switchboard for the White House. And you can call 202-456-1111. That's 456-1111. That's the comment line at the White House. And I want you to make it clear and address the comment or your message to Vice President Kamala Harris and tell her with urgency and respect that we must keep the $15 an hour minimum wage provision in the COVID-19 relief bill. It is a central and integral part, of that bill. You have got to keep that $15 an hour provision. That's what you've got to do. You have to do that, Senator, former Senator, and now Vice President Harris. You have to. You are the President of the Senate, and it is imperative that you do this. You have the power to do it. It's been done before. Hubert Humphrey has done it at least twice. He did it at least twice. When he was in the Senate, he overruled the Senate parliamentarian. The Senate parliamentarian is an advisory. Her word is not bond. So if that opinion can be overruled, and it can be because it has been in the past, there is no reason why Vice President Harris should not do this. Or you can put it another way to Vice President Harris. Madam Vice President, I believe you're running for president in 2024. I believe that President Biden won't run for a second term. And so therefore, I have every confidence and belief that you will be running for president in 2024. Madam Vice President, one of the ways that you can get my vote for that moment in 2024, or there before that, when you decide to announce your candidacy for President of the United States, is to right now please overrule the Senate parliamentarian so that the $15 an hour minimum wage provision gets to stay in that Senate bill. If you do that, you have my vote when you decide to run for president, whether that is in 2024 or whether that's in 2028. Madam Vice President, thank you very much. That's the kind of message you should be leaving for Vice President Kamala Harris. That's the kind of message you should be leaving for the switchboard, the comments line at the White House. Again, those two phone numbers, 202-456-1414, that's the switchboard. The comments line, 202-456-1111. Please do not hesitate to call those numbers right now. Welcome back. So that's your homework for this particular day. It's to make those phone calls. Please make those phone calls. Very important that you do. Thank you for doing that, because we have to do this. We cannot afford to do what many of us did during the 8 Obama years, which was fall asleep and allow President Obama to tell you, I'll take it from here. Thank you. We cannot allow that kind of surrender. It doesn't matter who it is in the White House. When people do good things, you credit them. When people do not do good things, you criticize them and you challenge them to be better. And that will apply, from my perspective, as it always has, to any administration, be they Republican or be they Democratic. I have no hesitation whatsoever to give credit where it is due, and I have no hesitation whatsoever to criticize either one of these political parties. And that, of course, includes the Democratic Party. Because a lot of the Democratic Party has taken black voters for granted, has taken brown voters for granted, has taken young voters for granted, native voters for granted. What's being done about the violence against Asian Americans, for example? I've not heard anything. That doesn't mean they're not doing anything. But what's being done about that on a federal level? I know that President Biden had done something with this. He signed an executive order a few weeks ago when he was in his, you know, the first week or two of office, when he signed all those executive orders. And he did do something with this. But what's happening in Congress about this? In the House and the Senate, what's going on? The Democrats have control of both of these chambers. And sometimes they're behaving as if they are on the minority side, so to speak. We know in the Democratic Party how to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. We have done it so often. And we must learn the lesson, because if we, in general, we, not just the party, not just the bosses, not just the DNC, but if we in general, those of us listening who are voters in the Democratic Party, if we are complacent, you are going to be waking up to swastika land. You are literally going to have, if we don't get our act together and keep pressure on these people, and if these Democrats continue to throw away victories by snatching defeat from the jaws of those victories, we're going to have the Lorena Bobbitts, you know, the Sarah Palin lookalike, the Marjorie Taylor Greens, the Josh Hawleys, we're going to have a Republican-controlled House in 2022 or in January of 2023 if these Democrats continue to stay corporate and cavalier and taking us for granted. That cannot happen anymore. And that means we have to make it clear to them that it cannot happen anymore. We have voted, we have voted, we have voted. We have absolutely voted. We've done everything we've been asked and more. And more. Now, it is time for our promissory note to be cashed and paid in full. Paid in full to us. If you thought that putting some black folk in your cabinet was good enough, President Biden, you got another think coming, because that was just the beginning. Now, you have to repay us as a people. You have to. Otherwise, if you turn your back on us, and you promised you would not, if you do, we will turn our backs on you. And we will turn our backs on Vice President Harris. And that won't be a good look for her or for the entire country. We have to agitate, as Frederick Douglass once said. We must agitate. Harriet Tubman urged us to. That's who I salute on this second day of Women's History Year. Harriet Tubman, one of the great women who has ever lived. Harriet Tubman. We have to act. We have to be engaged. President Biden and Vice President Harris are literally on a small little island with all their power. And they are standing on extremely shaky ground. Because on that tiny island of power that they have, around them in the moats or in the seas around that island, are all of these Republican and Nazi alligators. They're one and the same. They're all Nazis. Nipping at the heels of President Biden and Vice President Harris. Metaphorically. But really, I mean, that's essentially happening. The Democrats have power, but they are on such shaky ground right now. And you feel it. At least I do. You sense it. The barbarians are at the gate again. They never really left. And all the while the barbarians are nipping at their heels, President Biden and Vice President Harris are not being emphatic enough. We have to start innovating and urgently conveying messages to President Biden and Vice President Harris that this is a serious situation here. You cannot be cavalier. I'm not saying that they are cavalier. But you've got to respond. to this letter that's been sent to you. And I have heard that President Biden is very indifferent around this, keeping this $15 provision, minimum wage provision. But if you continue to have that posture, if it's true, you're going to see a backlash in 2022. The Republicans will win the House if you continue this kind of, well, we're in power, kind of thing. And if you do not serve the people the way you promised, the way they demanded, you are going to see the House being lost. The Democrats already lost, 20 some odd seats just last November. And you've still got Speaker Pelosi walking around here as if, well, we're in the majority. Well, you are, but only by about 9 or 10 or 11 seats. And history shows that the winner of the previous presidential election loses in the midterms in these two chambers of Congress. And right now, I'm not seeing anything messaging-wise from the Democrats that tells me that that reality is going to change any. Jamie Harrison, you send me all these emails all the time asking for money. President Biden, you send me these emails all the time asking for money. But what are you doing right now to fight for that $15 an hour provision for those people who look for a job, a minimum wage? For that mother who has those three kids working three different jobs, what are you doing for her? The COVID-19 $1.9 trillion package must just be the start, not the end. And that $15 an hour minimum wage provision must be part of that bill in the Senate. We cannot fall asleep on this. Please call those numbers I gave you earlier. I will put them in this episode as well, in the liner notes. We have to do this. Otherwise, we are going to lose this country, and we're going to lose it to a bunch of swastika-wearing thugs. Violent terrorist people, the same ones who committed that terrorist attack on the United States Capitol. If we get complacent, and if President Biden and Vice President Harris and the Senate and House Democrats, if they become complacent, they are going to really see a country disappear and disappear into the hands of Nazis and terrorists. Which really is the same thing. You have been warned. Thank you very much for listening to this edition of The Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore. It's all happening at the Politocrat Daily Podcast online store, and you can go there right now at the-politocrat.myshopify.com. Lots of good new items, brand new, designed by yours truly. So please head to the Politocrat Daily Podcast online store now. Thank you very much.